everyone. Welcome to the Secular Overeaters Dialectical Behavioral Therapy class series. A trained therapist and secular member of Overeaters Anonymous will teach us new DBT skills every week that can help manage emotions, which can often trigger overeating. To find out more about secular overeaters, visit the website, secularovereaters.org. Now let's begin today's class.
So hi, everybody. I don't know what time of the day where you are, but it's morning here in New York City. You can see behind me, it's a gray day in Manhattan. So it's nice to see all your faces in front of me. And letting you know that this event is sponsored by Secular Overeaters, but is not an official OA event. That's why we're able to use non-OA resources. Also, please join us in creating a safe space for atheists, agnostics, and others by avoiding theist and patriarchal language. Welcome to the Secular Overeaters Dialectical Behavior Therapy Skills class. My name is Susan P., and I'm a compulsive overeater and sugar addict. Along with that, I've been a CBT therapist for about 36 years and a DBT therapist for over 10 at this point. And I use DBT skills every day in my life. It's helped me with my recovery. And so I'm really excited to share all of these skills with you. This is an ongoing class where we'll focus on a different skill every week. So this is the third class. You don't need to have come in order to use the skill that I'm going to teach today. And the topics we're going to cover every week will be in the chat. All right. So we begin every class with a mindfulness exercise with the same goal. And the goal is to get you out of your head and into the current moment so that you can really participate. And I'm going to share one today that is my absolute favorite. It's called 5-4-3-2-1. I don't know if anybody knows this. It's also called a grounding exercise because it grounds you in the present moment, right? I actually do this one every day when I walk my dog and I try to find different things. And so I'm just going to give you the instructions and that'll walk you through it. So the first thing I want you to do, it's not a closing your eyes mindfulness exercise. It's an eyes open exercise. Find five things that you can see and name them to yourself. Five things. This one's a little tougher. Four things you can hear. And if you can't pick out four individual things, make some noise for yourself. Next thing is three things you can feel in your body. So not emotions, but sensations. What do you feel in your body? Like you feel your backside on the seat or something like that. Next is two things that you can smell. And then one thing you can taste. Okay. That's 5-4-3-2-1. I love it, right? It's to me sort of this pleasurable activity that grounds me in the current moment. Okay. So today we're going to talk about my absolute favorite DBT skill, the one that I think is probably the most useful of all of them. And when I run groups I run graduate groups, which means people have gone through all the DBT skills, then come to my graduate group where we review the skills. And I make everybody say, as they introduce themselves for the first time, what's your favorite skill? And sort of hands down, this is a big one. It's called checking the facts on feelings, right? And it's so important because feelings are incredibly useful, right? They're always valid. They always come from someplace, right? But if we're not really accurately figuring out whether they fit the situation or not, we can make some mistakes, okay? So let me give you an example of why it is so important to pay attention to feelings. One of the main reasons is because then you can decide what you want to do with them. So I have a daughter who is now 18 years old and is amazing. But her personality has not changed, right? So that when she was a toddler and a preschooler, she was just as persistent and strong in her opinions and resistant to direction, right? as she is now. And when she was young, I used to tell myself she will be a formidable woman. And I was right. You know, she's 18. She's not a woman, but she's in a nursing program. She has a brown belt in martial arts. She was a varsity athlete. She is a formidable young woman. But boy, was she difficult as a kid. And I am not the most patient person in the world. I have to work very hard at being patient. I have ADHD. I do not like to wait. I have a very hard time with it. I am also a child psychologist, right? And in my career, I've worked with very, very emotionally disturbed and violent kids long before I became a mom, right? And the penalties for my losing my patience, right, as a professional or a mother could be catastrophic. One of the things that I learned when my daughter was young, that the thing that separated me from being from the abusive parents I was sometimes working with was this big, right? That's what separated me from them. Thank goodness I had skills, I had education, and I had a partner to help me. I wasn't in this alone. But boy, I could have gone over that line in a second, right? That's how difficult it really was. I think that sometimes it's hard to understand how a little child can push you into the line of complete insanity. So I worked hard on it, right? Because I knew what the consequences could be. And I remember locating, right, where are the very first signs of anger? And I located them in my body, and it was a clenching in my stomach, right? And when that clenching occurred, that meant I had to use some skills to calm myself down, because after that, all could be lost. I hope it's not sounding too dire, and I hope I'm not triggering people, but boy, was that an important lesson for me, is that we must be open to experiencing our feelings, right? Because they can give us incredibly important information, and then we can make decisions on them. So I talked about this in the workshop that I gave, but not everybody was there, is the importance of feelings. Right? Some of us are afraid of feelings. And I know why, right? There are really good reasons. And I'm going to tell you why. For a long time, I was not great about paying attention to my feelings. And this is a story that goes back to when I was 8 years old. Okay. I have an interesting mother. Let's just say that. Okay? She is highly critical and not particularly good with feelings. And when I was in elementary school, I was in a public school in Brooklyn, and they started us out taking a foreign language back in the 60s. When I was in elementary school, the language to learn was French, right? It wasn't English at the time, it was French. That was the international language of business and diplomacy. So they started us out on French, and I was a perfectionist little kid and was struggling with it. And in the summer between second and third grade, I guess it was, or third or fourth grade, I was so anxious about how I would perform in French that I didn't sleep well the entire summer. I had insomnia about it. I was so worried about it. And so I finally broke down and told my father about how nervous I was about this, because he caught me like up in the middle of the night, and he was wonderful about it. He said, don't worry about it. You know, your uncle speaks French and he'll help you with it. And I felt so relieved. The sense of relief was unbelievable. And then my mom stopped up into my bedroom after that and looked at me, sneered at me, and said, I didn't realize you were such a worrywart, and walked out. Okay. So not the, you know, most abusive thing anybody could do, but I never forgot it. And the message it sent to me was, if you show feelings, I have contempt for you. You are weak, right? That was the lesson it taught me. And I learned that lesson well. And I have two younger sisters, thank goodness. And we all agree that we got that same message from our mother. And so we sort of lost the benefits that would come from paying attention to our feelings and honoring our feelings. And it's something that I've worked on since then that isn't the case anymore. So I don't know, anybody seen this poem before by Rumi called The Guest House? I love this poem, and I'll read it to you if you don't mind, right? This being human is a guest house, every morning a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. I have been in love with this poem since I first discovered it years ago because it's talking about your feelings, right? This is a guide from beyond. The feelings are there for a reason. They're trying to tell you something. And so we want to pay attention to them and honor them. Now, here's something very interesting, right? Does it mean that the feelings that you're having, right, fit the situation every time? It doesn't mean that. So here's a little thing too. It says, I love this. Your emotions don't create problems. They arise to help you deal with problems. Learn their language and you can change the world. I'm so on board with this message, okay? But here's something else I want you to pay attention to. Here's an interesting fact. Our feelings always come from someplace and we can figure it out, right? They don't come out of nowhere. We can figure out. But sometimes they don't come from the situations that are causing them. Right? They come from someplace else. They may come from the past, right? They may come from because we're in a bad mood about something else. And so one of the things we want to do is pay attention to our emotions, figure out what they're trying to tell us, and then figure out if they fit the situation that we're in. I'm going to tell you another story about me and my daughter, right? I told you that I'm impatient. I told you that I have ADHD. And my daughter, when she was maybe three, four, on her way to, I had to take her on her way to preschool before I then get my bus to the city to go to work, okay? And so I would, let's go, we have to leave. And it would take forever for her to get going. Then we go outside, get in your car seat. And that would take forever for her to get into her car seat. And by this point, you know, like I'm nervous about getting to work late. She's taking her sweet time about it, and I am getting angry, right? So the feeling I'm having is anger. And then I decided, okay, I don't want to lose it. So I'm going to use a calm down strategy. And this story is not about the calm down strategy. It's just an example. I decided I'm going to count to 10, right? I'm going to count to 10 to calm myself down. And I started doing this, and I discovered something extremely interesting to me that I hadn't realized before, is that this poor child had actually complied with the command that I had given her within 10 seconds, right? Every single time. It wasn't that she wasn't listening to me. It was that it seemed to take a really long time. Because I don't know, 10 seconds this guy feels like a really long time. 1, 2, 3, 4. But I realized that this poor child had been doing everything I asked her to do, just not as quickly as I might have preferred. And it was an eye-opener to me, right? So that I was feeling very angry, and actually my anger did not fit the situation. Does that make sense to everybody? Understand what I'm saying? Is that often we're having an emotion, right? And if we check the facts on the emotion, actually, maybe it doesn't fit. So was my anger valid? Absolutely, right? All feelings are valid. You're having them. And there's a good reason you're having them, right? And I was having them not because she was not being compliant. I'm sorry, I'm using like parenting language here because I teach parenting too. It's not that she wasn't being compliant. It was that I was impatient and anxious about getting to work on time. And I wasn't being mindful of that fact that she was fairly quickly doing what I asked her to do. And so that is an example of my checking the facts on my feelings. Okay, feelings are important. They are valid, right? But sometimes they don't fit the feelings. So I want to go back a little bit. We're going to stay on this page and everything, but I want to go back and say, why don't we think our feelings are valid? Why don't we pay attention to them? Why do we question them? Okay, and so the one reason may be because of my experience, we learn that if we give in to our feelings or pay attention to our feelings, that the message is maybe we're being weak, right? Or inconsiderate of somebody else or something like that. Another reason is that sometimes we fear our feelings. We fear that if we actually open ourselves to them, right? we won't be able to tolerate them because they'll be so strong and never end. And feelings that cause distress can be very, very uncomfortable. There's no question about that. They can be experienced as extremely painful or intense, really, really tough to tolerate. But you know what? In the end, they're feelings. They can't do anything to us. And so I'm not going to tell you, just let yourself feel them. It'll be fine. That's not what I'm going to tell you. But what I am going to tell you is maybe practice feeling them for a little bit. In the business, we call it exposure, right? Gradual exposure. Expose yourself to the thing that you are avoiding so that you learn to tolerate it. And so I'm saying, okay, if feelings are something that you really avoid feeling because they're so scary to you, set a timer for 2 minutes and think about something that makes you feel negatively, and then turn your attention to something else that will make you feel better. With the goal being that you become less afraid and more confident in your ability to tolerate. This can sometimes take a long time, and that's okay. That's all right. But maybe set a realistic goal of thinking about something that causes distress, and then having something ready to turn your attention to that you know will be soothing or distracting. So, yeah, sometimes feelings can be really scary. Sometimes we're afraid of what we might do if we allow ourselves to have our feelings. Again, the same situation works. Expose yourself to them for a little bit. And then have a plan for what you're going to do to soothe yourself or distract yourself after. And this is so important because, again, feelings are something that help us be in wise mind, right? It's re it, to make the best decisions, to make wise decisions for ourselves, our feelings must be involved.
Okay, let me see if there's anything I want to say more about that. Oh, shame. Thank you. I'm glad I checked my notes. Some people feel ashamed of their feelings, right? Like I shouldn't have them. Those are bad. Certain feelings are shameful. I don't know why. We may get a feeling that we're ashamed because it involves wanting to hurt somebody, or wanting to do something sexual, or wanting to, again, hurt somebody we love. Those are just feelings. They don't hurt anybody. They're telling you important information. If you're having a feeling you want to hurt somebody, that means you're probably really angry. Pay attention to that. I don't believe that anybody should be ashamed of their feelings, or that any feelings at all are shameful, because you don't choose them. They just come to you. You do choose what you do with them, though, right? And so pay attention to what you're feeling. Now, there's something called thought action fusion, and there are some sort of very religious people actually who think that thinking something is just as bad as doing something. Most of you aren't old enough, but some of you maybe, to remember Jimmy Carter admitting that he had adulterous thoughts when he was married. And so that's a sin. I don't know if he said that that's a sin, right? But some people thought it was a sin. That's called thought action fusion, right? Where there's this idea that thinking something is as bad as doing it. I'm not on board with that. I am totally not on board with that. You don't choose your thoughts, but you do choose your actions. And so I don't think there's any shame that should be attached to any feeling that you might have. Okay, I'm off my soapbox. All right. So if we're going to be checking the facts on feelings, how do we do that? And so my story about counting to 10, although I admit I didn't do it on purpose, right, helped me check the facts on my anger. Here is, I think, one of the most useful pieces of paper that has ever been written. Examples of emotions that fit the facts. And I use this as a guideline. So let's use my anger at my daughter. Okay. All right. Anger. I was feeling angry at her because she was taking so long to get in the car. An important goal is blocked, or desired activity is interrupted or prevented. Okay. That's kind of true, right? Is that my goal was to get to work on time? Right. And a desired activity was interrupted. It wasn't prevented, but that's kind of true. Okay. Two, you or someone you care about is attacked or hurt by others. Nope, that doesn't fit. Three, you or someone you care about is insulted or threatened by others. Nope, she wasn't doing that. Four, the integrity or status of your social group is offended or threatened. Nope. Okay. So we have this one thing that sort of justified my anger.
In this case, right, an important goal is blocked, getting to work on time, or a desired activity is interrupted or prevented. Okay, so there's a little bit there about anger, but then I bring in, okay, was she doing it on purpose? No. And to be perfectly honest, I have to really question myself on this one too. Okay, if she was doing everything that I wanted within 10 seconds, let's figure this out. Okay, and maybe at the most, I gave her 10 things to listen to me, like put your backpack on, put your jacket on, get in the car. Maybe there were 10 things. Okay, so then let's do the math. That's 100 seconds, right? So maybe she delayed me by a minute, and I know it's not exact, by a minute and a half. Okay, so she's delaying me by a minute and a half, and I'm losing my mind. So is an important goal blocked or desired activity interrupted or prevented in any meaningful way? No, right? So if I take a look at this and check the facts, okay, in reality, no, that's just not true. So none of these things fit, right? The child maybe delayed me by a minute and a half. I can still get to work on time. I can get her to school. No big deal. So what we do is we say, okay, I'm having these feelings, and I was having the feelings because I'm impatient and perfectionistic, and I wasn't actually paying attention to what was in front of me. And so no, my emotions didn't fit the facts. The next page, here we go. So here's how you check the facts. You have this handout that you can print out, okay? But I wanna talk us through this one, right? So here are the first step that I like to do is I like to make sure that the story I'm telling myself is actually the truth. Let me give you an example of this. This comes from a client I'm working with who came into the session and he told me he was very, very upset. He was angry and he was sad because he was out at an event with his young adult son, a college-age son, and he said, I said something and my son bitch-slapped me. That's upsetting, right? If you're out, and even if your son is metaphorically bitch slapping you, that's a problem, right? That's really upsetting. Who could blame him for being so sad and angry at his son? And so I went to step three here, right? What are my interpretations, thoughts, and assumptions about the event? I actually wanted to know instead of that, because his interpretation was that his son bitch slapped him. What actually happened? Give me the facts. Run me through the incident here. Tell me what actually happened, right? What are the facts? And this is what happened. He said something that was embarrassing to his son. His son pulled him aside where nobody could see and said to him, Dad, next time, could you not bring up this subject to me? That was it. And so actually, I think there's a better representation of that is that his son gave him some gentle feedback, right? And instead of being sad and angry, maybe he should feel proud of the young man that he raised, who could stay calm when he felt embarrassed and take his father aside and gently ask him not to do that again, right? And so maybe the anger and the sadness didn't fit the situation, right? Maybe pride could fit the situation more. And so we talked that one through, right? So that there's a big difference between bitch slapped and given some gentle feedback in a kind way, right? And so that's the first step is decide if the story you're telling yourself is accurate by looking at the facts, by running through the things that actually happened rather than the meaning or interpretation that we put on it. Okay. Step two, right, is am I actually exaggerating or catastrophizing something? So here was the example with my daughter. Right? She's making me late. She's never listens to me. She doesn't do what I say. Why does she have to be so defiant? That's an exaggeration. Yes, the kid has a strong personality, but delaying me by a minute and a half is not a catastrophe. Doing what I said, but taking 8 or 9 seconds to do it, right, is not horribly defiant. So we want to check again, is our interpretation, is it an overreaction? Are we catastrophizing, right? Are we making something bigger than we definitely have to, right? And then for me, the third step is Am I underestimating my ability to cope with something bad that might happen? And that happens a lot of the time. Right? Am I thinking that I lack the ability to cope when actually I don't? And so then I don't have to feel so nervous about something or angry when something happens. And as a therapist, one of the things I often do with my anxious clients is, okay, I'm anxious about something. And so that I'm not going to be able to go. I'm anxious that when I get into a situation with new people, I won't know what to do. And so we identify the worst case scenario, as long as it's like a normal worst case scenario, not like a meteor hits the earth. I'm talking about a realistic worst case scenario. And then we cope with it ahead of time. It's called coping ahead, right? And we realize that, oh yeah, okay, right? I'd be able to cope with that. I would know what to do. And that gives you, I think, the confidence to take on something. I'm sort of a social anxious person. Most people don't know that because I have a lot of social skills. I know what to do in different social situations, but it's always there. There's always this sort of base of social anxiety. And I remember going to a conference and presenting at a conference, which does not make me nervous because I know how to do public speaking and I have a role and I don't have to like improvise anything. I'm fine with that. But then sometimes they have these dinners or these, come for drinks after the conference, and that does make me nervous. And so I walked into a room one time and I didn't know anybody there, and I did feel really awkward. And you know what I did? I left. The stakes were low. I didn't have anything to do by losing. I could have gone up and talked to people, but to be perfectly honest, I don't need to practice my social skills. I know them. I teach them. So in this case, right, I might have avoided it because, oh no, I don't want to feel uncomfortable, right? But in actuality, I know what to do, right? In a situation like that, I scan the room for somebody that I know. I will get myself something to drink, so I have something in my hands. I will hang out for 5 to 10 minutes, and then if not, if you know, maybe I will approach somebody if they sort of look familiar, but I don't really want to that much. And I always know that I can leave. So I have a plan. I don't have to avoid the situation. I have a plan for the situation, even though I'm not going to fool myself that I'm not going to feel nervous. I will. All right. So we cope ahead. So just to summarize, sometimes the reason that we don't check the facts, right? Or we don't do something, or we sort of don't really deal with our feelings well is number one is we are sort of exaggerating or overestimating, right? Making the bad thing bigger than it is, right? And we underestimate our ability to cope with the situation. Okay. All right. So I threw a lot at you. Is anybody willing to share a situation, a feeling that you're having? And then we can help you check the facts on it. Anybody willing to do that? Amy.
Hi.
Thank
Oh man,
you.
I'm confused. Okay.
That's okay. That's why we're going to go through it.
Okay. So, I was taking a lot of notes, and you're saying, our feelings are just they are, and they are valid.
Yep.
But then we talk about overreacting, and part of my problem, and you say the feelings don't hurt us, but in my case, they do. I suffer from what I call emotional toxicity. Wind up with daily problems with irritable bowel.
Good point. Good point.
I have a friend who's very, very ill, and she's been very ill for the past 10 years, but there's been a progression over time. She basically, the hospital is a revolving door for her. She's in and out all the time. I sat with her as she was in a coma for over 2 months.
Let's start with your feeling, Amy. We're not going to get over, we're not going to get overwhelmed by the details yet. Okay, because that's what happens sometimes, right? Is that for many of us, not that the details aren't happening, but they can start to swirl, right? And so we're just going to start with labeling the feelings. That's where we always start. And sometimes that can be hard, right? To figure, especially if there's mixed feelings, but
Well, I'm pissed. I'm angry. I'm scared out of my mind. As a friend of mine keeps saying to me, Amy, you kind of keep correcting the car and getting it back on path for these people, for her and her husband, and they just take the steering wheel and drive off into the ditch.
Okay,
So there's a
so tell
lot of
me.
frustration there.
Sure. Okay, and frustration is anger. And let me just give you a little preview, right? Because we check the facts on our feelings, and that's the skill that we're learning today. But then there's a part two and a three, right? Once we check the facts on our feelings, if the feelings fit the situation, right? And you answer yes to all those questions on that handout, the next step is problem solving. And we're going to talk about that next week, right? How do I figure out what to do? If my feelings fit, I don't have to sit here and just have these feelings, right? I'm going to do something to change the situation so that I feel better. Okay. If your feelings don't fit the facts, and that's going to be in 2 weeks, we do something called opposite action. We rethink and act the opposite way from how our feelings are telling us to act. So this is just step one, right? Is just checking the facts on our feelings, but we don't just stay there. We do something to them, right? Or we do something with them. That's why we want to have that accurate read, because it will determine what comes next. Okay? So it sounds like you're feeling a lot of things, but the last feeling word you used with was frustrated, right? Which is a form of anger.
And
Okay?
depressed. So is that also a form of anger?
Depression is a mix usually of anger, sad, and sadness. But let's start with the anger, okay? Does anybody remember the questions, right? Is an important goal being blocked for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Is an important activity being interrupted by them, by what's going
Absolutely, yes.
on? Okay. All right. Is the well-being of someone you care about being threatened?
That's what I had me up all night, yes.
Okay. All right. So what we have now determined is that your feelings fit the facts. Right? They fit the facts. And so that unfortunately that's only part one, right? But part two is going to be then what do we do about that to change the situation, to make the situations into something that's not going to make us feel as angry, as much as is within our control, right? Sometimes there are things that we actually don't have control of. And in this situation, that might be the case. I'm not sure. And then we then do the opposite action. Okay. Thank you so much for sharing, right? Such a good example. Does anybody have anything else? Another one they're willing to share? Nora?
Yeah, I have one. I was taking a computer class. The teacher, he suffered some sensory motor something, I don't know, sensitivity. And you may even see it on my face now. When things get winded, I get frustrated because I want to get to the point, okay?
Tell us what you're feeling. What
My
what's
feeling was that
number
I'm frustrated, but the issue is he
frustrated?
asked me to leave. If I'm showing my frustration to him, he didn't want me to stay. I'm not reaching my goal of learning what his intentions are.
You're feeling frustrated, which is a form of anger, right? Frustrated is sort of a less intense form of anger. And so in this case, you wanting to be in the class is an important goal. And so what we would do next is try to problem solve about how you can be in that class. And that might be for you. And again, this is next week. That might be something like working on managing your face or using a fidget toy to manage your frustration or something like that, right? I don't know enough about the situation to help you problem solve, but that's what you would do is that if your feelings fit, right? And you don't have the control in this, you can't make somebody teach faster, right? And so what we will do then is figure out a way, in general, when your feelings fit the situation, to problem solve. Okay? We have time for one more. Vicky.
Hi. Okay, I had to leave for a second because they're fixing a leak. I moved to this building because I lived in a building that had toxic mold and there was a mushroom growing in the
Vicky, start
floor.
with your feelings. Start with your feelings.
I am feeling so anxious that they didn't get everything and that there's mold growing in that ceiling because I now have experience with mold and what it can do to your health.
Got it. And let's take a look at that. Jenny, if you don't mind, can we share that page with the questions about your feelings? The one with the anger, anxiety. I want to look at the anxiety ones because, Vicky, you're feeling anxious, right? There we go. Let's take a look at
Thank you.
fear. You
Okay.
ready? Okay.
Yes.
Here's fear. And so let's answer these questions. Is there a threat to life, to your life, or that of someone you care about?
If there's mold, yes.
No,
but
no,
they
that's
did
number
work on it.
two. That's number
Okay.
two. Like, if there's mold
Oh,
for the next
there's a threat
month.
to my health. Yeah.
Okay. So, but is there a threat to your life right now?
No.
Okay. Is there a threat to your health of that of someone you care about?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a threat to your well-being or that of someone you care about?
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. So here we go, right? I just want to make sure that we're not exaggerating, right? Because in the near end, like let's say they don't fix it, you're unlikely to die from mold, right? Okay. But there is a threat to your health. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So again, everybody's bringing up emotions that fit the facts, right? So in this case, right, in this case, then we go to, okay, my emotions fit the facts, my anxiety about my health, right? Mold can be really dangerous. It feels like your anxiety fits the facts, Vicky. And so then we go to problem solving, right? The next step then is, okay, right? Then what are we doing about that? And, you know, I happen to know you are doing something about that, right? You have taken action, right? That's right. And so it's so important to talk about this because there are a lot of people who, if their feelings fit the facts, don't actually take action, right? Some of us practice acceptance when we don't have to accept, when the thing that we're going through isn't acceptable. And so that's why it's important that the next meeting, we're going to be talking about problem solving, right? How to figure out what to do about a situation where your emotions absolutely fit the facts, but you're not sure what to do. So we'll do that. Then, like the client I was telling you about who was bitch slapped by his son, right? Okay. Who actually wasn't. His son gave him some gentle feedback. In a case like that, right? We will do something called opposite to emotion action, right? So I asked him, if you weren't feeling so angry and sad about what your son did, right? Because this is what he did. He like stormed away from him and felt bad about it and then went and got it and drank too much. If you weren't feeling that way, if you weren't feeling sad, if you weren't feeling angry because the situation didn't demand it, how would you be acting? Right? And the opposite action to anger is curiosity or acting like slightly nice rather than attacking or running away, right? And acting out in some way. And so we're going to talk about that in 2 weeks is this thing called opposite to emotion action. How do you do that? Right. So we're going to stop in just a minute, but any last minute questions about this? Karen, do you have your hand up for a question? Oh, you're still on mute, Karen.
Not for a question. I was going to give an example.
All right. Give us a quick one.
Okay. I felt really sad, really in despair, sick to my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Anxious. That was my feeling.
And so anxiety and sadness?
Yeah, and okay. Fear. Like
okay.
Fear. And
what what was the situation?
My daughter is thinking of moving 2 hours away.
Okay. All right. So is there a threat to your life, your health, or your well-being?
No.
That's right. That's right. Good for you, right? I get how you would feel that way.
Yeah.
I would feel that way too. I felt that way when my daughter went to college.
Yeah.
I totally understand why you would feel that way. It makes perfect sense. But then when we take a look at it, right, the things that would justify that feeling, right, they don't, you know what?
Yeah.
It's just, it just doesn't check out. And
no,
so then we'll figure out opposite action. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody, so much for sharing your examples. I love that. It really makes it come alive. All right. So that's all the time we have for today's class.
Thanks for joining us today. If you'd like to support our efforts, please visit secularovereaters.org and consider making a small donation.